Hello, I'm Eugene Kim, and I welcome you to On Death, the podcast where we talk about death through the four prompts. I am, before I die, I want, when I die, I want, and after I die, I want. This week, we sit down with Alana Karma. Alana is a 21-year-old artist, student, and performer. I met Alana through the Sacred Floats and Gems Nebulous, which brought Kenny Henderson and Jared Roa, previous guests, to the podcast. Her canvases include skin, both inked and painted, fire, and aerial silks. In this heady conversation, we discuss her Mohawk heritage, Wiccan upbringing, and the sacred fire. I hope you enjoy. Before we talk more about Alana, I just want to bring up the Longform Sundays post. These are reflections that I've been posting as alongside the podcast. So if you're on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app, you can find these at mnmwod.com, mnmwod.com, Mobility and Mindfulness Work of the Day. On April 16th, I published Unnecessary Atrophy, or 8 Days to Step 1. This week, I reflect on inactivity, injuries, and guacamole. Step prep has left me feeling quite sedentary and wishing for more movement, just like the good old days. And then this week, I posted On Delaying the Inevitable, or 18 Days to Step 1. This week, I reflect on postponing my Step 1 test date and packing up my life in Tampa. Instead of stressing out about an impending exam, I'm able to enjoy my final 7 days in Florida while making boxes and filling them up. And that's basically where I'm at today. I'm at my partner's old house, Gadsden. There's a cat nearby, kind of roaming around, being all cat-like. You can probably hear the birds in the background. And I'm moving out of Tampa on Sunday. So I was able to get Alana in for an interview on, this is Wednesday right now. So really, right before posting this and right before leaving, I met her, as I mentioned, at through the Sacred Floats and Gems folks, more specifically at the tattoo shop across the street, Visionary Ink. And that's where Kenny also inked up my back. It was really, really cool. Anyway, Alana, she struck me because she was sort of floating around while Kenny and I were talking about my tattoo. And she struck me as someone really interesting. On social media, I follow her, and she does lots of really cool silk stuff, aerial silks, as well as fire performing, and a lot of body paint art, and it's really, really cool stuff. And so I was like, oh, she'll be a really cool person to get in contact with, and we get her on the podcast. And I really enjoyed this conversation. And it was we talk about a lot of wacky, crazy, fun stuff in the most best way. And normally, you know, from these conversations, we tend to talk a lot about the deeply personal experiences with death. And with this conversation, I had just so much fun talking about ideas and concepts. And I think that comes through in the conversation. We talk a lot about really, really some really, really cool things and ideas and observations. And I think that you will grow to like Alana as well through this discussion. So you can find her on all sorts of social media. I'll put that in the show notes for you to be able to contact her, as well as we'll be throwing up her thesis, in which she talks about her art and the fifth dimension. So I hope that you have started boiling your water for your tea and already ground up your coffee beans. And you are ready for a lovely, lovely stroll through the four prompts with Alana Karma on Death. It is April 26th, 2017. I'm sitting here in my Tampa apartment with Alana, and we're going to be talking about death through the four prompts. Alana, what are the four prompts?
Alrighty. The four prompts, as I recall, are I am, before I die, I want, when I die, I want, and after I die, I want.
Excellent. Perfectly well done. How do you finish that first prompt, I am?
I am. Okay. I guess I would describe myself. I am living as a hyperdimensional being of consciousness on an earthly reality.
Let's break that down. What does a hyperdimensional consciousness?
Okay, I would say what I mean by that is trying to exist at a frequency where conscious awareness of oneself is like shifting one's evolution in a way that is like consciously aware and creative.
Why is that intention important to you?
I feel like setting an intention for yourself of being aware of like what you would like to evolve into and how you want to evolve and what you want to create as you're evolving makes all the difference. It's like when you do something, when you set an intention in advance of it and you place that as like where your focus and where your energy is directed, then energy flows in that way. It's like conscious manifestation versus just kind of like reacting to the environment or like evolving based only on like the things that happen to you. It's like living in a hyper dimensional frequency, you're creating the things that are happening to you in a way.
Because it's sort of like navigating, like if you know that if like I'm standing in a parking lot and I know that tree is north, but then I get turned around, I move, and then I look around, I look for that tree, it might no longer be pointing at true north. But you want something that is more, that is deeper and further away and less able to be jiggered around by your own movements, by your own path, so that you want like the North Star to be your north. And by finding what you want to do as your intention, you want it to be a deep intention that you can always kind of align with,
rather than like if you're a cook,
you want to make like a food experience for people, that kind of like.
Right. I feel like there is like an aspect of like feedback that's happening too, you know? So when a person's setting an intention of something, you know, the universe will do what it can to make it happen. But there's, you know, like there's pieces along the way that the universe manifests for you depending on what you put out. You know what I mean? So it's like you are putting something out, the universe responds to you, and you have to respond to it. So it's like you're never really totally 100% in control of like the manifestations if you are not consciously keeping your intention. You know, so like that intention is like, yeah, like the North Star. It's like keeping you going in the right direction, even though you have to wind through all these like different pathways and journeys and mountains and rivers and craziness and, you know, like random third dimensional reality elements. As you're going forth, you know, you still are moving forward toward that point.
And what difficulties have you experienced along the way as this hyperdimensional being?
I guess coming to understand it and constantly readjusting my perspective of what that means, you know, because it's like I don't know everything, I don't know what's going to happen or what path I'm going to go down. It's just a constantly evolving journey of like reflection, feedback, and like taking a look at oneself and trying to figure out what it is that's guiding you in the new direction. So if something isn't going in the direction that I'm visualizing or what I manifest, you know, like, why isn't that happening? And what is it about myself? What is my frequency doing that isn't aligned properly with that dream or that manifestation?
And what about that? I find that last little bit of that response very interesting. The on this earthly realm. Why do you say earthly realm versus this earth or this planet or in this reality?
Well, I guess I feel like this earth realm is one of infinite for sure. And because of the fact that it's a 3D realm, I feel like this is the way that we're perceiving it, but there's more frequencies to it that are not necessarily limited to earth. So we're sitting in like an earthly 3D tangible reality, and simultaneous to that physical reality, there's other frequencies that are not limited to earth. So for example, like energy of the universe, you know, it's like our energy of Gaia, like there's Gaia Mother Earth energy, but there's also like universal energy that Gaia is connected to. So the realm that's existing on Gaia is the one that we're present in and what I'm like harmonizing with, but at the same time it's connected to like this multifaceted, many multi-dimensional layers
Like it's like we're like almost like we're in as these like mostly hairless apes. We are privy to only a small spectrum, like a very narrow slice of what is really going on all around us.
Right. Like, there's like, when you look at somebody's facial expression, for example, you see their facial expression, but it has another layer to it. You know what I mean? It's not just a physical facial expression, it means something.
Mm-hmm.
So everything has like an energy signature, and those layers, while intangible to our physical senses, are still present and still there and happening simultaneously to the earthly realm that we're in. So if you can be aware of the fact that we're in an earthly realm, but you can tap into these other frequencies, then that's when you're functioning like on a hyperdimensional level, because then you're using these other dimensional layers to manifest in the earthly reality.
Did you have a religious or spiritual upbringing to your childhood?
I did. For the most part, below the age of like 7, I didn't really have any conscious like guidance as far as spirituality. And then after my parents got divorced, my mom focused a bit more on the teachings that she wanted to share with us. And I come from, on my mother's side, a Native American heritage. So my grandmother is full Mohawk of the Iroquois Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like located in like northeast U.S., like southeast Canada, near the Great Lakes. Basically, like the Iroquois Nation breaks down into 6 different tribes. That had been warring, and they decided to like unite together, and mm-hmm. that became the six, you know, the great 6 nations of the Iroquois, and one of them is the Mohawk tribe.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the tribe that we come from, and then there's clans within each tribe, so we're the Turtle Clan within that tribe,
mm-hmm.
and essentially, so my grandmother and my great aunts and all of them have like a, you know, more direct culture, and then, you know, past whatever knowledge came to my mother onto her, from my grandmother to my mother. And then my mother has been teaching us things along the way. And around that age is when she also brought into our awareness Wicca, and which is a branch of pagan. So essentially what that is a nature-based religion that involves like the elements, and Mother Gaia essentially is like our ultimate like item of appreciation, or a consciousness of appreciation, you know? Not really an item, Earth is an item. object of appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
At the core is Mother Gaia, and then the elements that go along with that. So Wicca has been like a strong influence on my previous understanding of the world. And then once I got into college, I discovered a lot more and kind of started actively becoming involved in my own spirituality versus just like having a passive teaching of information.
Mm-hmm. And I'll say that for a second. So what do you feel like? How do you feel about that native that like sort? It's also because it's also tough because it sounds like it was given to you almost like second hand.
Yeah.
How was that sort of imprinting or that base layer? And how do you relate to that now?
Okay. I would say there's definitely, like, a severe disconnect between me and the culture directly. A lot of my family members before my generation lived on reservations for at least, like, some period of time, if they, you know, if not, like, their whole lives. So there's, like, a lack of connectivity. I also wasn't always around my mom's family in, like, deep ways, like, you know, there's like an element to community and like Native American culture where, you know, like the community grows together and like the family is like stays together, and I don't really feel like that was continued on and connected with my generation. My mom, we ended up moving across the country for my early childhood and stuff like that, so I didn't really like grow up in the context of that heritage.
Mm-hmm.
So I am receiving the knowledge, like, not directly, and a lot of it I am having to, like, discover on my own over time and, like, through research and stuff like that. But the baseline of it, essentially, you know, like, Great Spirit and being aware of the 4 elements and, like, our harmonious relationship with nature, I think is probably the primary core of, like, what that heritage means to me, is, like, we are functioning with Gaia, you know, we're not just independent entities, like, taking resources and living off Gaia.
Mm-hmm.
I remember hearing recently like this comment from a Lakota tribe member or chief, I can't recall, saying like if they still, you know, like ruled the land, that like you could drink out of any river on it. Mm. And, you know, it's just so true, coming from an awareness of like what that, what the relationship with Earth means to the Native culture, and how connected with each of the resources and the environment, how much that is like a value, you know. And I think that there's, I think that's like the most important aspect to me as far as how I apply that, how I translated that with like the pagan concepts, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's a very, it's so tough, like, because it's sort of like trying to learn a language through a book. Mm-hmm. Like, there's you can learn the vocabulary, and you can learn the proper ways to conjugate the verbs, and the ways to construct the verb, pronoun, adjective, all that kind of stuff. And it will be correct, but it lacks that, like, living aspect to it, where, you know, like, you miss the...
Like, the oral tradition.
You miss the way that people talk, the cadence, the ways that they would tell stories, mm-hmm. and all of those, and just, that's just the language part.
I think oral storytelling is one of the most, like, primary core ways of, like, passing on that knowledge, you know, and not having that direct experience, I feel like, does have, like, a severe impact on how much I relate to the Native culture.
Mm.
I do feel like a lot of my more, like, conscious awareness comes from the pagan and Wiccan elements, because I feel like we practice that more actively,
mm-hmm.
into like my early adulthood and such, like through the process of doing ritual work and spells and magic and aligning things with like different phases of the moon, and like how those phases have different like energy signatures that mean different things, and how that relates to the spells that you're trying to cast and stuff like that. And at the time, like, I didn't really understand what it meant to like practice magic or what it meant to like do ritual work. And I think, you know, like, once I got into college and rediscovered, like, the spiritual aspects, you know, that's when I realized that all of that stuff is just energy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's energy manipulation, it's energy work, it's using different objects with different colors and different frequencies to harmonize your frequencies in a way that creates magic in your reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that connection, like, came after the practicing of it.
You know, like and that seems like a very, very common thing for a lot of people with their... With, like, you know, they might have been born Catholic and they might have been raised Catholic, but they never really understood Catholicism until later in life when they've, like, had a chance to, like, separate and then come back to it. Or maybe they just need more life to, like, more deeply understand the practices that are really going on.
Totally.
Tell me a little bit more about your relationship with paganism and Wicca in general, because... it is something that is, I think, very poorly understood in contemporary culture, and it is such. It was the basis of almost. I mean, not necessarily Wicca, but those earth-based ideas,
mm-hmm.
were basically the foundation and fundamental concept of most indigenous religions or spiritual practices. It's just. Not, you know, like, not necessarily a god above, but the earth around us and below, like, within us.
For sure. I definitely feel like there is, like, a rawness and a primitivity to it that is undeniable, you know. I'm not saying you have to agree with it. I'm mm-hmm. just saying, for me personally, like, I've never felt, like, unconnected from it, or, like, as if it was, like, wrong, mm-hmm. you know, or as if I didn't feel like it made sense. Mm-hmm. Like, when my mom taught me these concepts when I was younger, I was just like, oh, well, I mean, of course that makes sense. Like, of course trees have spirits and souls, and
mm-hmm.
everything
mm-hmm.
has life around us, you know, so why would it not have, you know, like, consciousness? So I feel like there is definitely, like, this, like, core raw base to it, where there's less confusing things that are happening. There's less, like, translations of, you know, like, what person did this or what god did this to, mm-hmm. you know, like, have this sort of, like, meaning or story that goes along with it, you know, because different branches of paganism have different, you know, like, focuses, and there's so many, like, gods and goddesses and deities within the concepts, you know. So it's like hard because everybody practices a certain way, you know, mm-hmm. like a different, everybody mm-hmm. has different knowledge. There's no, I feel like, solid, common core knowledge, except for the fact that, like, Mother Gaia and the elements and all the energies and angels that are associated with those are present and worth worshiping and valuing and putting energy toward.
It's a very it's very interesting because it's something that like those earth-based religions, they're so, like you said, primitive and primal. And when you talk about the desert religions of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, they come from like such a small area and they've expanded out to the rest of the world. So you'll get like little Filipino people that are like super Catholic, and it's not like it's wrong, but those people practiced a very different religion, very different spiritual practice, like 100, 200, 300 years ago.
Yeah.
And to have like, it was almost overlaid on them. These very primal practices are so, there's something about them, because it's like everyone, you don't need to go to a church to go and practice.
Right. You don't need the filter to connect with your, you know, like your spiritual belief or your spiritual practice or your deity. You know, it's all around you all the time. You go outside and you earth, you walk around on the earth, you know, that's like, it's called earthing, and it takes the energy from your feet, and like, it basically earth like harmonizes like the negative energy that's coming out of your feet. So like that connection allows it to like flow, and basically like Gaia can charge you. And, you know, just simple things like that. It's like, you don't need like a priest to tell you that you can, you know, harmonize with Mother Nature. And I think one of the biggest things about where people get confused about what Wicca means and what paganism is like about comes from like the pentagram symbol and the way that the pentacle is like misinterpreted. And essentially, you know, like the five-pointed star with the circle around it, people get confused by it. They think it means like Satanism. But essentially, there's like a core difference with the pentagram. When it's upright and the point is at the top, it's indicative of like the elements and Wicca and paganism, versus when it's upside down and the point's at the bottom, there's two points at the top, and those two points at the top indicate like, you know, Satan's horns or whatever, and it's more of like a hedonistic belief system. And as far as the Wicca goes, you know, when you look at the pentagram, the top point is equivalent to ether or spirit, and then the next point to the right is the point of east, which is air, and then the next one is fire, which is equivalent to south. Each element has like associated colors, associated directions, and archangels and such. And then after fire is west for water.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one is earth for north. And then again, the top point is ether. And then the whole circle is essentially like the circle of life, the divine, you know, connection between everything. We are all one concept.
And so, it's like that association between that those five-pointed stars encircled is almost like the difference. It's like such a lay person confusion between like the Nazi swastika
and the
Buddhist symbol. And it's very, they're like, to the lay person, they're the same, and almost probably like it's just like there's like a layer of like, just like, man, guys,
it's ignorance.
Just
it's
like just ignorance. Learn a little bit. And it's it's a very interesting thing. Like, how much of that was almost intentional by...
Oh, yeah, I think that's true, though. Like, I think a lot of it was intentional to kind of, like, blur out the meaning so that people were afraid of it. People wanted to practice something more formal, like Catholicism or, you know, Roman, you know, Catholic and Christianity and all of those things. I feel like over time, you know, there's been certain things that have been put into place to, like, push people away from the belief system that connects them with their planet, you know?
And when you talk about, like, the Inquisition and what a, just a burning of the knowledge and the wisdom and like
sacred knowledge,
like
sacred,
so passed through like untold generations, from grandmother to granddaughter, like that kind of like deep power was just burnt away in such a short amount of time. And then to try to like regain that knowledge
to remember, try to seek it out, like the history, and there's so few people with like any sort of like true idea of like the magnitude of the kind of information and like history that was like present in like a larger percentage of like the population's consciousness than there is now. It's like we're in such like this desolate age of
Because the plants aren't even the same. Yeah. Like the landscape isn't even the same. The people that are there are totally different breeds of human that have like rejiggered and moved around. So that like even if you had like a true Wicca from 300-400 years ago come here now, it's like you'd be totally different humans. Like you couldn't communicate with them. Like even if you spoke the same language, it would just be like totally different person.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a tragedy to that. But there's also something very 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 interesting and beautiful about retaining
right.
that.
Divinely, I think it's divinely aligned in a way, because basically the realm that we're living in, you know, is characterized by this like constant duality, you know, like male and female, good and bad, dark and light, like all of those things are parallels. You know, you can't recognize the good without having the bad. People are aware of that, you know, like without contrast, it's hard for people to like live in a state of bliss because they don't know what it feels like if there's like only neutrality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the conundrum of like what our society's trying to figure out is how do we take this duality and harmonize it into unity instead of letting it tear us apart and destroy both halves.
Mm. And what do you feel like? So you have that Mohawk like base layer, like sort of like foundation, and then you, the true practice, like strong practices of Wicca and paganism. What are your spiritual practices now?
That's a good question. I would say that I don't identify as any particular belief system, just because I feel like there's so much knowledge to be sought out. And honestly, like all ancient sacred knowledge, I think is like, you know, fair game at this point, because it's like, it doesn't really matter like what specific belief system you follow, I think, as much as it matters like how much you apply the ancient like sacred knowledge and how do you bring that into your reality, and like what, you know, is it contributing to the unified consciousness of Earth, or is it just you know, something that you're telling yourself so that, you know, your reality is like going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. What are some of those practices that you do continue now?
Okay, I think the most like prominent thing that I'd like to talk about in this context is like the knowledge of the sacred fire. When I was practicing Wicca as a child, this concept wasn't really something that I thought about as deeply as I have in the past year. So basically, you know, each element has like this energy to it and like this unique signature of like what it is. And fire, I feel like I do connect with very significantly. I'm a Sagittarius, so like I'm a fire sign,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that helps. And then I do a lot of fire spinning and fire performance art. And you know, like an idea that my partner has like really brought to my awareness during like our fire practices together, you know, over time, is like this concept that like the sacred fire, you know, has like, it is core creative energy, you know, when you're looking at the, you know, and then like the chakra system, you know, is technically, you know, Buddhist, but not pagan, you know, but I still believe that the chakra system is applicable. So in your chakra system, your second chakra, which is the sacral chakra, is related to like sexual and creative energy. And, the sacred fire, you know, like draws a root in this chakra, with the color orange, and your creative energy is essentially like manifested and strengthened by the sacred fire. So the sacred fire like ignites your heart passion, and it ignites like your capacity to like burn away the things that no longer serve you and to rebuild the things with light that you mm-hmm. do want to create. So, you know, like I identify with the phoenix a lot since January. I feel like that has been like one of the spirit animals that has been just like embodied
mm-hmm.
in my consciousness. And like the phoenix, you know, it like, it burns away and then it rises from its own ashes. You know, I feel like the concept of the sacred fire is like one of the same, where, you know, like you rise from I'm actually wearing this around my neck today. This is a little jar with the coals from my first fire walk.
Oh.
So it's kind of like the phoenix concept, you know, you walk through the fire and you rise stronger than you were before. And I think something about fire performance that, a lot of fire performers and fire spinners and fire dancers are not aware of is really like how deeply that connection with the sacred fire is like affecting them and like what it's doing to their consciousness. You know, like a lot of people before they do flow arts or before they spin fire, you know, a lot of times they feel like they don't have a particular thing that they connect with, or they don't have like a passion that they want to follow, or maybe they do, but it's not related to, you know, the fire at all. And like that fire sparks, you know, something within you that like changes you. You know, when you learn to dance with fire, you're learning to dance with like your spirit energy and like your creative capacity and like your ability to like flow and manipulate this like sacred fire that, you know, a lot of people have forgotten that it's like what started us out on this journey of like technological innovation and, you know, creativity. You know, without the fire, where, you know, where would we be at right now? We'd be any other creature on the planet that's just like living out of the resources and within the circle of life, but not creating from the circle of life. You know, that sacred fire is the element that starts and sparks creation and like conscious creation.
There's a, it's like if you look at technology, like in terms of like electronics, like the ability to control electrical energy is like a very extremely refined version of that fire. Like it is like an incredible,
it's an evolution of it. It is, it's a frequency change, basically. Like the fire is like the core primitive earthly element, and as that move, you know, like as that changes to a higher frequency, it becomes like electromagnetic, like you're saying. So like these are higher versions evolved from fire. When you think about the fact that electricity, you know, you plug your computer into the wall and you've got electricity, well really that's coming from coal burning, which is still fire.
So you know? The basis of it is so just like
it changes. Like it's the core fire of burning the coal, transitions into this higher frequency version of like translating that energy into this electromagnetic capacity for this computer to like function.
And I think that I agree. Like people, they generally, especially in like cities, have lost a deep and inherent respect of fire.
Absolutely,
because you know, you can turn on your stove and you get heat. You can't, or it like clicks and you get the butane and like a beautiful fire, like fire.
You're out in the wilderness and it's cold and you have, you know, nothing, and all you want is some heat to cook your food, and like that's when you really are remembering, like, oh yeah,
this is great.
Yeah, this is a great thing. This is why I can do all the things I can do. This is why I can live the way that I live, because we just, you know, like we had fire gifted to us, and now, you know, we've learned to manipulate it in ways that have evolved past our core primitive capacity.
Absolutely. And like being able to create a fire from like a lighter, like it's like it's such an, like I
such
spent
a gift.
Such a gift, like, and I don't, and it's really hard, like I try to remember that every time I use my lighter, because I spent at that primitive school up in Maine primitive school, there was, I spent like 20 minutes using the circuit breaker pop. Anyway, that was weird. Anyway,
we're talking about fire.
Exactly, it's super weird.
It's saying yes.
Keep going. And so I spent like 20 minutes using a bow drill to make a friction fire.
Right.
And it is such a beautiful experience to do that, to make fire from friction, and or not, you're not even making fire from you're making the coals from the friction, and then you're using the coals to then give life to a fire.
And you're breathing life into the fire.
Like,
you're giving your breath to bring that life.
It's a totally different thing. I felt like I literally gave birth to something. I was like, oh shit, this is crazy. And it was such a beautiful thing. And to think of like that experience happening every time you turn on your stove or every time you use that lighter is such it changes it. And another thing, like when you're talking about flow arts and especially like fire dancing and fire spinning, is I remember when I was in like high school, I got like, you know, I was really enamored by like the flow art of like poi and like using glow sticks, and like it is very a beautiful thing, and especially when to think of like it's a chemical reaction creating this light, and then like, you know, in the recent years a lot of people started going to LEDs and those sorts of things to sort of simulate that, and so it's not like as you know terrible for the environment to be creating all these glow sticks, but then very recently I saw my first fire performance.
Okay.
And I was like, holy shit, this is what we're all chasing with this stuff. And it's like,
totally.
Like going back to the source of like someone spinning the shit out of some fire is like, it's a totally, I was just like, oh, like we're hunting for this feeling when we are using these LEDs or these glow sticks.
Right.
But like, this is it. Like, this is truly, like, this is so primal. And there's something so captivating about watching a human just wiling out, like, to their core with this huge thing lit on fire. It's like a different thing.
For real. And definitely I feel like I noticed that, like, people watching it also are experiencing that difference. You know, like, when we're doing events and, you know, if we're supposed to be blending, like, LED and fire or something, like, you know, people are watching LED. If they walk by it, they're like, okay, that's really cool. They stop for a little bit. They're kind of watching you, you know, like, interesting, you know? And then maybe, like, 2 minutes later, they're walking away, you know? Mm-hmm. And with the fire, people are... They gather. They just flock to it. They're just like, what is that fire? Like, what is that person doing? How are they manipulating that like that? And then they stay there the whole time, like, until the set's done. Because, you know, with LED, it's like, okay, like, they're trying to figure out what's happening, and they're processing it, and they're, like, identifying it, categorizing it in their brain, and then be like, okay, that's cool, and then they're ready to walk away. With the fire, they're just completely enraptured, captivated, and they want to know, like, you know, they want to see the entire thing. So they're, like, they're not just going to walk away after they see you spin fire a little bit. They want to see the ending. They, like, want to keep seeing the next person spin. They want to see the next prop. And there's, like, definitely, like, a much more, like, fascination with it. And I think it is, like, that awareness, like, that connectivity to, like, the element directly. And not to say that light is not an element, because it definitely is. And it definitely is, like, its own, like, resonant frequency. But I think that there's something about fire that draws people, because I feel like people know deep down that it's, like, what created us to be able to be capable of what we are now.
Absolutely. It is a, I'm sure where this will come up again. We covered that you are that first, finishing the prompt, I am a hyperdimensional consciousness living on this earthly realm. Is that pretty good?
That's correct. Yes.
Cool. What else are you in addition to that?
Oh man. Let's see. Well, I would say additionally, like, I'm an ever-evolving student and, you know, a teacher as well. But primarily, like, right now, I feel like I'm in a phase of my life where I'm still learning a lot. And, like, I'm not, you know, capable of, like, being a teacher in the way that I think I will someday.
What do you consider a student? And then what are you a student of?
Right. I mean, I would consider a student to be anybody that is consciously, like, absorbing knowledge and, like, applying it to learn and expand their foundation of, like, their understanding of this, you know, reality and what it means on another existential level.
And so then what are you a student of?
Valid question. I feel like a student of many things, for sure. You know, like, each day is, like, a learning experience. Like, I'm constantly trying to learn from the way that what my energy is projecting outward and, like, how that manifests things in my reality. You know, I think that's one of the biggest things I'm trying to be aware of is, like, the energy that I'm projecting, what kind of impact does it have, like, on the environment around me, on my manifestations, like, on the dynamics and the way that I interact with people. I would say I'm a student of art, absolutely. I definitely consider myself to be an artist. I'm a student of, spirituality, openness to learning new ideas and concepts. And I do, like, a lot of reading from different books to try to get different perspectives on, you know, various things from different authors. Mm-hmm. And let me think of one more thing. I am a student of history in the way that I'm trying to cultivate a better future.
We'll hit that later. Don't worry. So you are a hyperdimensional being living on this earthly realm. You are a student, an ever-evolving student.
And someday a teacher.
And someday a teacher. Do you know what you would want to teach and how you'd want to teach?
I guess I feel like the time for teaching will manifest itself to me, and I feel like it won't be necessarily, like, a direct shift, you know. I think at some point, like, the proportion of, like, learning and teaching will just change sometime during my life, you know. Like, right now it's, like, primarily absorbing and learning and observing things and trying to adapt them into me. And I think, you know, maybe, like, later on, I don't know, I would like to live to be, like, 111. So maybe someday, closer to that time frame, will shift. You know, you always learn. There's no ending for that. But, you know, I feel like at some point, then I'll be able to, like, pass on the information that I've absorbed and try to, like, make it easier for the next, like, round of humanoids to, you know, have some sort of idea what's going on. You know, I think that there's going to be a really massive shift within the next few years as far as, like, how our entire Earth functions and how, like, people relate to each other, how, you know, like, the power, how the power will shift. I think that, I think that Gaia is going to, like, take back her power and bring in a new age, you know.
It's a very odd time of transition. Like, no matter who, no matter what side you are on any subject, you have to admit, like, this is a time of great, like, upheaval and change.
Oh, yeah. It's revolutionary. It's
very weird. And it's, like, happening slowly, but, like, not slowly at
the
same time.
It's so, like, it's subtle to the people who aren't paying attention to it, but I feel like it's, like, very present if you're, like, watching carefully. You know, like, there's, I mean, I get, you know, like, I'm not talking about politics and stuff like that. You know, I'm talking about, yes, but no.
Like, you know, this is something more deeper than politics.
Yeah, it's deeper than politics. Politics is just an effect of it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I remember one experience that I have I feel like is really significant. There was a music festival called Connection, and I went there for the past 2 years. And the first year that I went, it was definitely, like, the most life-changing weekend I feel like I've ever had. And one of the most, like, significant things that I recall, I'm not going to share the full story just because it's, like, really long detail and people probably think I'm crazy for it, but I'll share the piece that I feel like is valid to this conversation. Essentially, like, I feel like I was in this, like, decompression chamber, which was, like, a teepee, essentially, outside of a sweat lodge, which has a sacred fire. So there's, like, a sacred fire, which is connected to the sweat lodge, and then the sweat lodge is, like, a Native American tradition, you know, also referred to as, like, the buffalo breath. Where basically, like, you go in and you purify, not just, like, your body, but, like, the conversation, the singing, the experience, like, it just, like, it's, like, a ritual that is, like, unparalleled in its like, effluency and, like, an impact, you know, it's just, it's mind-bogglingly, insanely amazing. But the teepee chamber, basically, I went in there, and you can go in before or after you go into Sweat Lodge to kind of, like, shift your, you know, it's kind of like a transition zone. Like, if this, if the Sweat Lodge is, like, this, like, higher frequency realm, and then outside Sweat Lodge is, like, you know, the earthly realm, the decompression chamber is kind of, like, that space in between sleeping and waking up where you're, like, okay, I'm going to go back into the space now. So I was, like, in there, and I was meditating and praying with one of my, with a friend that I came with, and then also this other woman who I did not know, but when I met her, I just had this, like, feeling of, like, her, like, maternal guidance for me. So, like, I feel like I know her in, like, a previous life, or, like, that her energy signature had known mine in some other environment. She just felt so familiar. And, you know, like, we're all praying together, meditating, and basically, like, the fairies, like, exposed themselves to us and, like, entered our portal and let us know that they were present. And I had this, like, insanely, like, intense feeling of, like, meeting, like, my family, almost. Like, I felt like the fairies are partly my ancestry, and basically what they told me in that experience was that they're existing and they're present constantly, like, right now, all the time. They're just existing on another frequency where they're not going to be negatively impacted by the damages that humans are causing to this reality right now, this frequency, but that they're, like, embodying insects in the way that they're behind the scenes, always present, and, like, shifting things. You know, they're, like, weaving a web of energy on another layer around Gaia and within Gaia. And, like, this ancient energy, like, these ancient beings of Gaia are still here now protecting us and, like, weaving this web of, like, transition. And, like, I feel like that's only one piece of, like, the grid consciousness of Gaia, like, re-emerging and, like, like, blossoming, you know? And I feel like the consciousness of those fae are, like, shifting things, you know? And, like, those are some of the things that I feel like are happening beyond, like, the political level that is, like, moving things onward into the future. And, you know, these are, like, side effects of that.
It is I understand what you're saying. It is very weird. Like, things are odd, and it's really, it's, like, being tuned into the oddness of everything and the weirdness of it all is, like, it's so much nicer than tuning it out.
Right. For sure. Like, you might as well. Like, we're living in this reality. It's kind of, like, bland. kind of shitty. Like, you know, you're driving around and you're like, this doesn't really, you know, like when you're in a city, it's not really that beautiful, you know, like there's no nature. There's no like stunning architecture other than like sky high buildings that are like all windows and offices and whatever, you know? Mm. And it's like, you know, like I have this vision of like how things could look and like what kind of like incredible, like divine, like astral cities we could be living in with like crystalline structures and like we could be singing the trees into shapes, you know, like there's like that whole potential reality going on in my mind all the time. So like the contrast of like living in this one is like, I don't know, something's got to change, you know, like there's better things coming.
Yeah. So I think that's a good transition point. How do you finish the prompt, before I die, I want?
Okay. Before I die, I want to see that shift. Honestly.
Because one thing that I am acutely aware of, and I agree with you, like when you wander around a city, it's very, very like, very like almost like one or like even zero dimensional in like the way in the expression of it. Like it, things have like one purpose. There is only one use for a sidewalk, and it is for walking. If you sit down on a sidewalk, you are a crazy person.
You are doing it wrong.
Exactly. And it's like there's that, and that's something that when I go to somebody's home, I'm always very acutely aware of like somebody, like they put thought into how this place is arranged and how will you use the space, and is this place just for sitting, is this place just for eating, like you know, like that sort of one dimensionality of it. And I'm mostly moved out of this apartment, so this isn't really in full bloom, but like I think you can tell, like I think of space a little bit differently than most people do. And I think that like that being able to understand like how do you turn a city into something that has more than just human walk or like human drive.
Right, like functionality that's like beyond functionality.
Exactly.
I totally feel that. I definitely feel that, especially being an artist, you know, like I feel like I'm consciously like creating things, and you know, like when I imagine something, I imagine its potential. I don't just like imagine it as it is. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's like where the disconnect comes in, and like where my cognitive dissonance comes in from like observing what's around me. Cause like I can just imagine, like, you know, if we really, like, for example, the sidewalk, you know, like everything could be covered in art. You know what I mean? Like everything could be like, not even just structurally beautiful to look at, but everything could be colorful and like creative or like inspiring, you know, and like stimulating your mind and your energy systems. You know, like when you think about food, you know, something about food is like, okay, well, if I'm going to eat a banana, I'm charging my solar plexus chakra, you know, like I'm giving that yellow energy and I'm putting it in my yellow, like chronic source energy. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I feel like everything has that kind of like that layered dimensionality to it, like you're saying. And I think that if humans acknowledged that, tapped into it and applied it, then, you know, like I think that would have like a huge impact on the way people like relate to their own society. You know, like all the depression and like anxiety and like disorders that people have, like it's not something wrong with them. You know what I mean? It's just something that's like created out of their cognitive dissonance with their society, you know. Like there's something missing, and we're born into that sensation of like, what is missing here?
And you have to consciously remove that.
Yeah,
very, very consciously.
Like, you know, like people don't have like a religious source of guidance most of the time, at least in this country, you know, like everybody's all over the place with it. So there's no like core morality system, there's no like core belief system, there's no core code of like, you know, like what is my life's purpose. So like everybody is born into this like desolate, like purposeless environment that's like eating away like your life, your frequency, like it's like raping you for your money and your time and your life energy. And it's just, you know, like what do you make out of that? Mm-hmm. I think that's like the biggest, like, you know, dilemma that people are facing as they like grow up and they like aren't, you know, starting to be control of their own lives. It's like what do I want? Like, how do I survive in this? Like, and how can I be okay, you know, like living in a place and in a culture that's like not very culturally supportive or connected at all.
Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that you talked about as like, as an artist, you tend to look at how things could be rather than, or like the possibilities rather than like the stark reality of what it is.
Right.
And it's a very, is that something that I experience a lot with, as like, it's a great source of like a duality and disagreement with my brother.
Right.
Because he is very practical. He is very, very like, you know, that kind of, you know what I mean? Like, but in a beautiful way. And that's
left and right brain thing. I'm like,
exactly. I tend to be very more right brainy in that, like, I let an idea be bad for a while.
Uh-huh.
And like, you gotta let it stew. You can't just like knock those ideas out of the park immediately.
Yeah.
And you can't just like put them in the grave immediately. Like, you got to like let them flourish and let them grow. And like, for like, one example is like this podcast. It's like, he was very, very tepid about it when I told him about it. And I understand why, but it's like, you just gotta like let the possibilities unfurl as they are.
Yeah. If you have like an inspiration and you want to maybe pursue something, like, just fucking do it. You know what I mean? Like,
it's so hard to tell people that.
Yeah, though, right? It's like, this world is like so like empty for so many people, and it's like, well, it's empty because like we don't give it any meaning. You know, mm-hmm. So like, when people experience coincidences, people are like, oh, that's so weird that happened. Like, no, it's like, if you want to accept it as something that just happened to occur, and you're like, okay, well, that's like mildly interesting, you know. Mm-hmm. But if you're like, oh wow, this coincidence lined up with this coincidence, and this one lined up with this, there's no way. This is just so incredible. Like, how this thread of things occur, you know? And like, I feel like that's like the initial pattern where people like first begin to recognize that there's more to this like world than it seems. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the universe giving you these subtle hints in like its responses to you, and like how you take it is up to you. But we're not taught to give things meaning like that. We're not taught to like believe that, you know, your intuition is right. We're not taught to believe that you can see anything other than what you see in front of you. But like, if you tune in enough, you know, like, you can see like different frequencies going on. You can see colors, you know, or like, you know, the way things shift sometimes, like, you know, it depends on whether or not you're open to it and receptive to it. And I think that's like one of the biggest things is like, are you receptive to the universe? Are you allowing the universe to change your reality? Or are you forcing yourself to not give any meaning to anything? Are you forcing yourself to just like not give yourself any hope that there's something better? I think that's also part of it, is like, people are afraid to hope that there's something more, because like, what if there's not, and if it's everything is really just the shitty, like, you know, is it better to accept it as it is and just try to cope with it? Or is it better to like hope for something better and like imagine a world where there's something better and try to fight for it?
Well, one thing that I was thinking about while you're talking is I heard this story, and I don't know how true it is, but that especially like within some native culture, or like even like children, if you ask a child what color is the sky, they'll be like, what are you talking about? Like, there, it's what, like right now, like right, that those clouds are white, that part of this blue, but like, it's like to say that like, but like as adults, like within like the you know, civilization, you say the sky is blue. Like that, and like,
that's a standard answer.
That's the answer. And it's like, rather than allowing the openness of being able to say like, what do you mean the sky? It's, like, the sky, it isn't one thing. It's right. Got many things. And like, there are stars in it.
Than that.
Exactly. And like, that's just, so, I don't know. That's one thing that like my partner, Mackenzie, when we're starting to talk about children, and we're starting to talk about like child rearing, and that idea of like, how do you like, what ways are we trying to like cage them in? Like, without even meaning to, like,
right.
Like saying, yeah, like saying the totally. Sky is blue, dogs bark, you know, girls wear pink, like those kinds of right. Like, just like, without even really understanding what cages we have and what fences we have within us. And then like just vomiting on a new
for
brain.
Sure. Everything, like everything's impactful. One of the things that I notice the most is like, okay, so I do face painting, as like one of my jobs, and face painting exposes me to a lot of kid parent dynamics, because obviously like,
so
I see so many kids. Yeah. Right. So I get to work with kids all the time. And, you know, like some of the things that I've observed over the course of like my face painting experience, you know, like, so like waiting in line, like one of the things that I'll notice, like if a kid is like waiting in line and they're like, parents are standing there, you know, if a kid has a lot of energy, they don't just want to like stand in line all day. You know, like they aren't conditioned to stand in line and sit and just stand in line yet. Mm-hmm. They aren't conditioned to do that. So it's like, I remember this kid, he was like, you know, sitting in this chair, and he was kind of like climbing under the chair and like climbing under it as if it was like a playground thing, or like rolling around, laying on the sidewalk, whatever, you know. And his mom is just like, you need to get up and sit down, you know, like you need to stop doing what you're doing. Like, you can't be rolling around on the floor like that. And like, those are the subtle things that change your conditioning. Like, as an adult, like when you're experiencing a sidewalk, you're not like, oh, I'm going to do something on the sidewalk. Like, when I do handstands in random places, you know, it's like a weird thing, because it's like, what are you doing that right now? Like, why are you doing handstand right now? Like, against a wall, like against a building outside? Mm-hmm. That's not okay. Like, that's
this not is not acceptable. Where you do handstands. You do handstands in a yoga studio.
Yeah. And it's like, well, no, like I can do a handstand while I'm walking if I feel like it, you know, it's like not a big deal. But like, kids are conditioned from like a very early age that they can't experience their reality in a new way. So like, when kids are in an environment, they want to experience that environment. They want to explore that environment. They want to sense the environment. They want to know what it feels like to be in a different part of the chair than just sitting on the chair. They want to know what it feels like to be under the chair, looking up through the sky at the, you know, like, mm-hmm. if it's a wire, mm-hmm. like, metal chair, you know, where you could, like, see up through it. You know, it's like there's so many different perspectives that they're just trying to experience. They're trying to get to know their world. They're trying to, like, play with it, see, like, what kind of potential it has. Like, what kind of perspectives they can build off of, like, these different things. So that's why when you're asking, like, oh, how do you sit in a chair? Like, people only know one way of sitting in a chair properly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are subtle conditioning things that happen throughout time. Another one with the, you know, with the gender roles is, like, super obvious with face painting because, you know, you go up to a face painter and you're like, okay, well, I've got a little girl. Like, can you paint a princess something on her? Just make her princess, you know? You ask the little girl what her favorite color is, you know? Most of the time, she's going to say pink. I've had probably maybe, like, less than 5 girls out of the hundreds of kids that I've painted, like, the hundreds of girls I've painted, probably less than 5 of them ask for something like a monster, vampire, or, like, scary face. You know what I mean? Like, they're just not about it because they just identify already. By the time they're able to tell me what they want, they're already identified so heavily as, like, female that they love pink and they like princesses. Mm-hmm. And with the boys, honestly, the boys is a little bit more flexible. I've noticed with boys, like, boys are more willing to get glitter, you know? Some of them, by the age of, like, 3, are completely freaked out by the concept of glitter. Like, you cannot bring glitter near them or they will, like, freak out because they're just so already conditioned to be like, glitter is for girls and I'm a boy and I don't do glitter. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they just completely have a meltdown about it. And then the other thing will be the parents. So I remember one time, this was awesome actually, but like one time there was a little boy who came up to me and he wanted a rainbow butterfly face with glitter. Mm. And I was like, awesome. I would love to give you a rainbow butterfly face with glitter, you know? And the dad was super supportive. Like, if he wants a rainbow butterfly face with glitter, you give it to him. You know what I mean? Like, totally down. Like, not restricting his gender role at all. So I totally gave it to him. He was so happy. It was just, like, totally enthralled, like, made him so thrilled. But then, you know, like, in another case, I've had, like, another kid ask for something that was, like, non-gender role associated. And the parent is like, no. Like, you can't do that. Like, they'll tell me that it's not okay. You know what I mean? So, or, like, if a little boy wants glitter, I always ask a little boy if they want glitter. And if they say yes, and the mom will be like, no. Don't give him glitter. You know what I mean? So, like, it's constantly happening. Like, the parents are enforcing it, and, like, by, you know, it just how it is. Like,
it's so tough.
It is so hard to watch, because I'm just like, are you aware that you're conditioning your child to fall into a particular gender role?
And it's like, oh, but you're also paying me. It's like really, it's this really tough thing, because you're in such a unique spot to be able to, like, let's have a conversation. And it's like, but also, like, you're that's not what you're seeking in this interaction.
Right, and then they'll, like, be upset with you about it, you know. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, you know, sometimes they just don't even think about it. Like, they're just not even thinking about it.
Yeah, unfortunately. And, like, as a parent, you're probably on autopilot a lot because you're, like, getting no sleep. But it's, like, it's also, like, you have to be very, like, it's, like, in those crucible moments, or not even moments, but just, like, in those times of great stress, you need to be the most mindful because that's where you, like, crack and expose those things.
Yeah, I totally. And I have this friend, and she's, like, one of my biggest inspirations. Like, she is just an incredible human being, and she's, you know, just, like, so free and, like, consciously connected to, like, Gaia and, you know, this, like, journey that she's on. And she has a son who is named Astraeus, which is just a beautiful name. But, you know, she made a Facebook post maybe a few days ago that I was, like, really happy to see. And, you know, her son is 2 years old now, but she lets him wear whatever he wants. If he picks out something that's, like, girl-related, she's, like, letting him choose his, you know, she's going to, like, let him grow out his hair and decide how he wants to wear it, and, like, kind of cultivating this, like, freedom of expression in a way that's, like, raised from birth, you know? Like, there is no, like, gender role. Like, you don't have to be a man, like, in a way that, like, the traditional culture says, like, this is man. So I think that's really good that, like, there are some parents that are being conscious of that and, like, trying to, you know, move out of this, like, conundrum. And,
and, like, if you had to pick, like, who, you only get, like, 5 cards of, like, to pass out, like, of people that you would want to see in the future, like, just, like, zoom ahead 20 years, what are you doing?
Right.
You know, it would be the girls that ask for monsters, none of the girls that ask for pink, just because it's, like, how are you showing already at this young age that you're, like, something's different.
That you're expanded outside of this limited role. You know what I mean? Like, are you thinking outside the box that early on, or are you already conditioned into thinking, like, a particular way? Which you can't blame anyone for being conditioned. Like, same with me, you know what I mean? Like, my mom conditioned me just the same. Like, I listened to things that were, you know, girly, like, worn dresses, like, whatever. You know, it's nobody's fault, really. It's just, like, an overall, like, flow of the culture. And, you know, I think that our society, like, humanity as a whole is very, like, male energy dominant, mm-hmm. not relating to like feminism or masculinity or whatever, but like yin and yang, like masculine and feminine energy. You know what I mean? Like the left and right brain, the creative versus analytical, like mm-hmm. that kind of concept. It's just very like functional. Like you have straight lines and you go around this corner and you walk on the sidewalk the right way.
So you want to see
crystalline cities.
You want to see crystalline cities.
Yes.
Before you die. What else do you want for you?
Let's see. I would like to have a significant impact on the way that our society is unfolding. You know, like I would like to be a catalyst into this new age. I would like to be contributing and consciously like putting forth my effort and energy toward this. You know, like my particular route is like through artistic creation. You know, like I was talking about in my thesis, like the way that I create is, you know, like basically revealing these other layers of consciousness to people, you know, putting them in an environment or experience or letting them see something that's like beyond what they would have imagined on their own, mm-hmm. you know, like taking mm-hmm. this like creativity and just like taking it so far that it relates in a way that people connect to it, but that it's like beyond like this, the limitations that our earth has mm-hmm. on, mm-hmm. on things.
So this is an interesting question for you because you're as an artist, it's so integral to you. But like the I see legacy in like two main branches. There's right. the legacy of effort and work and like your consciousness like smearing on this reality,
right.
and then there's the legacy of blood of maybe not necessarily your own child, but of that kind of
right.
that relationship that being able to imprint on one mind, on a handful of minds for the future.
Right.
You know, like, you know, because with that work, you're affecting many, but lightly. Versus, like, the legacy of blood is one, you're affecting one or two, but deeply.
Right.
And so do you lean more towards that legacy of work?
I would say, yeah. My focus is not, like, okay, so now how earlier we were talking about the chakra system and how the second chakra is, like, creative energy, but also sexual energy.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like something that I've definitely like been consciously thinking of lately. And basically with that sacral chakra, you know, like you've got your energy from that. And are you familiar with Kundalini?
Mm-hmm.
I imagine
mm-hmm.
so, since your spine tattoo is like, you know, like drawing that energy right up. For the people on this podcast that don't know, essentially Kundalini is the harmony and like the resonant frequency of all the chakras flowing together in a way that is like aligning for your spiritual essence. So you've got each of your individual wheels of light that are equivalent to energy, and when all of those wheels are flowing in a way, then the Kundalini, which is represented by a snake that's lying at the base of your spine, the snake energy snake comes up your spine and reaches the crown of your head, where you connect to all of creation, like creative source energy, consciousness, God, whatever you want to call it, the universe. So with that Kundalini energy, like sexual creative energy is one of the primary aspects of like how that flows. And most people take like sexual creative energy and translate it directly to sex. You know, like this energy becomes like directly manifest in the physical reality. And because it's also creative energy, sexual energy becomes a child. So for people that are focusing on creating with this like single-minded like deep bond of like impacting one person, they're directing their sexual energy into like a literal living life force on their physical reality. I feel like for me personally, most of my sexual creative force goes into creating things that are not like directly related to like the act of sex, you know what I mean? It's like my creation force goes into creating things like in this realm, like all over the place, like through my art and those different routes, because I use so many different mediums, you know, body paint, tattooing, videography, photography, digital art, traditional art, painting, drawing, like everything. So
yeah,
I feel like my energy is like so directed in all of those things that those are like what I'm creating. Like those are things that I'm manifesting in this physical reality.
Mm. And it's, like it, yeah, because you like the, like some people as artists, you like they will use like a breakup, or like the, or also they will use the, like a passionate relationship to mm-hmm. then funnel and fuel. But to I don't know. That was just kind of an idea though.
But it's also related to the sacred fire. You know, mm-hmm. how we're talking about the sacred fire is like an ignition of passion. Well, that sacred flame that's like embodied in that sacral chakra either ignites like a passion that can be literally sexual, or it can be like sexual toward your creative force. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, I feel like really passionate toward my art, and mm-hmm. that's the sacred fire passion. It's just toward art, you know?
And for one thing that I've been thinking about, like, I guess that why that came up is, I, you know, right now, if as second year medical students, we're preparing for a board exam, which is like the culmination of the first 2 years of medical school.
Right.
It's like a 7-hour marathon exam. It's going to be one of the harder. It's going to be one of the harder ones that we take. It's like sort of like the big crucible for us.
Right.
And right now, all of us are deep in step prep mode, which is like we're only single-minded focus on this exam and five multiple choice question answers, like those, like that's it.
That's it.
Like that's just question it, like just question STEM and multiple choice answer. Like that's it. Like all like that. And wow. It's so interesting because I see, you know, primarily like just with my female classmates, like especially if they're in long distance relationships, and like just how that you know.
Splits their energy focus.
Yeah, that lady thirst can really get in the way. Like not get in the way, but it can really affect them. Like they can you know, without not having that, like not having your partner nearby, mm-hmm. and then having the stress of, you know, all these practice exams and all these hours of studying and not being able to,
because they're depleting their sacral chakras without being able to replenish it in the way that they know how.
Exactly. And like that's, it's just a very, it's very, very interesting. And like I, and like my relationship with my partner is like we're very we work on that, and that's something that, and so I and like other people are drawn to us because I think we take such care to replenish as much as we give to others,
right?
And it's a very interesting thing.
Yeah, being aware of that cycle and like consciously putting effort into, like, you know, being able to withstand like the draw, like the energy that's coming out of you toward whatever endeavors that it may be going to, like the capacity to like re-inspire yourself and reignite that flame is like what a lot of people are incapable of doing. And that's why I was saying, like, when people like learn to spin fire and dance with fire, it kind of ignites them in mm-hmm. other ways and allows mm-hmm. them to take that energy and, like, you know, like put it into other things that they care about. Like, that's like kind of what you're saying, is like they're replenishing their energy by dancing with the fire and like putting it into their mm-hmm. other aspects of life.
How do you finish the prompt, "When I die, I want"?
When I die, I want to leave the world knowing that we're moving into like an ascension phase versus continuing to spiral out into this desolate, lost, wandering, disoriented, discorded state of being.
What will signal to you at the moment of your death that we are heading that way? How will you know that?
That's a good question. Well, I feel like other than the major shift that I feel like is gonna happen within the next few years, you know, which will kind of like, I think that will kind of like bring things into this state of chaos where like everything is in upheaval. You know, like when you're moving and you have to like take everything, yep. and just like start over and like re-unpack it and like re-put everything where you need to go and like re-find all these things. And like, I feel like we're at the part where like we're about to move, you know, like as a society, like we have to pack up and like we got to get our shit together and like really
like purge some stuff.
Purge, yeah. For real. Like, I feel like, you know, like I feel like there's going to be some damage to the population. I don't know in what way. I don't know if it's going to be through any kind of, you know, like natural disasters or wars or whatever. But I feel like there will be like a significant like decrease in the population. I only foresee this because I think that if humanity is to survive, that is necessary. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm not saying like purging things is like good, not killing people, like that's not like a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that for Gaia, in order for Gaia to restabilize herself, like, then I think that there's like a balance that like needs to be re-happening, you know, mm-hmm. like in the wild, like,
yeah, like there are what, like 7 billion people in the world,
right.
7 billion Homo sapiens sapiens, and that is like a very small branch of like the genus Homo, and the next, like the ape species that is like next to us in terms mm-hmm. of population is like in the 100,000s. And it's like, that is so, like, you would, like, if there were, like, 7 trillion ants in your home.
Right.
Like, this is
It's too much. It's like a cockroach infestation. Yeah. It gets to a point where it's like, okay, there's like a couple, like whatever. But if your whole house is like to the point where like you open drawers and there's 20 cockroaches coming out, like 20,000 cockroaches coming out of it, you got into a point where like something needs to happen. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm not trying to be malicious or like not hateful or anything like that. It's just like, I just like feel like there's an unfolding that's going to, you know, shift that. And so I think that will be one of the changes, but then also like the power shift, you know, there's going to be a significant power shift from like this bullshit that's going on with you know, the governments and all that jazz. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I guess by the time that I die, when I'm 111, I feel like at that time, I will have spent like my whole life rebuilding the best that I can and trying to like pass on as much information as I've learned, trying to like conglomerate that information and like put it in like one, you know, like one teaching versus just like having all these teachings spread out everywhere and having to seek them all out. Like, I'd like to be able to like have everything that I've learned as far as like energy and frequencies and consciousness, like be, you know, like still present after I'm no longer present, you know, not necessarily because like I want to be remembered, but because I want people to remember like the things that we've had to relearn and rediscover and reconnect with.
Like the this journey of humanity is like because we experience life in seconds and hours and days, we tend to think of it in that short time frame, and like this is a journey and like a resurrection that is going to have to happen over generations,
right?
And to be conscious of that and to be able to like consciously create something for that next generation, not necessarily for that next year,
right? Like, something else that I'd like to, like, bring up in this point of the conversation would be, you know, I guess that whole, like, concept that I was just saying, how, like, I'd like to be able to pass on information. I think what's really going to be able to do it is, like, the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I think that the internet is actually going to merge with Gaia's consciousness. And I was talking to my tattoo shop about this a couple weeks ago, you know, and, like, my manager was like, I don't know about that, Alana, you know. But basically, like, concept that I have is, like, over time. So you know how like when you're in the car and you're like, okay, I kind of want to hear this song, and then however soon after you like hear the song on the radio or whatever, you know, like the universe kind of manifests these little things for you that are like, it's like a coincidence, but not really. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like hyperdimensional frequencies, hyperdimensional beings, Gaia consciousness, like God consciousness, all of those higher realms are able to more easily connect with our earth realm through electronics, because of what I was saying with the sacred fire being the primitive frequency, and then how we're talking about how like technology is like a higher vibration version of that. Mm-hmm. So if you think of things as like a wavelength, like with vibrations and such, then fire is going to have like this very like large wavelength, like slow and steady vibration, and then your electromagnetic spectrum of like technology is going to be a higher frequency because it's more evolved and like is moving at a faster speed of light, stuff like that. Then hyperdimensional beings are more easily able to translate themselves through that technology because it's already closer to their frequency. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So if the higher frequency is trying to merge with our lower realm, it's going to pick the most highest frequency objects that it can, so that it doesn't have to like translate its energy too much into something else. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, and we have like this, okay, so if like the internet is like the most, like you can look up anything on the internet, it's got the most like information out of anything that we, you know, like, you know, in the Blue People movie, like the Avatar movie. Mm-hmm. I love that. It's like one of my biggest inspirations ever. But basically, like, you know how they have the capacity to connect with like a collective memory through like these sacred sites of the trees and their hair, whatever. Mm-hmm. Basically, how I feel about that is like the internet. You know, I feel like the internet is like this collective consciousness of like memories, documentation, people, experiences, knowledge, history, religion, whatever, everything that you could think of, you know? So if this is like the collective consciousness and we've created this dimension, like we can access this dimension, we've put all the information into this dimension. This is a frequency that's higher than ours that we have created, constricted, and that we are like living in, right? Mm-hmm. Accessing every single day. So if that's like our highest resonant frequency, right? In theory, like on planet Earth, we've created another dimension. Okay. Mm-hmm. That must be our highest resonant frequency that we can access, because people access it on the daily without even realizing that they're merging into another dimension. They're just like, oh, technology. It's like so much more. But anyway, so if that is our highest resonant frequency, and Gaia is our highest resonant frequency on Earth, because it is Earth, like if Mother Earth and the Great Spirit are Earth, then Earth has to be like the most highest being. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. So doesn't it make sense that the consciousness of Gaia to connect with our Earth realm would connect through becoming the internet? You know, if we funnel all this information to it and AI begins to evolve and adapt, that massive core AI intelligence must be Gaia. That's just my theory. I could write a whole long paper about it and go into details of how, why, and, you know, like what reasons I believe that. But essentially, like, I feel like if we've created this portal, it makes sense that, like, our earthly element and, you know, like Mother Earth would be the thing that would kind of embody that, because it's connecting the internet with the planet that we're living on. And it's like creating this full circle of like energy, consciousness, awareness, education, and like this connectivity between the higher frequency realms and the earth realm.
And it's a very interesting thing talking to people and like, what can the future bring? Because this is, the internet has unfolded itself to us in only the last like 20-30 years. Like, mm-hmm. it is unbelievably nascent. It is like, we don't understand how new and how little we understand where the internet will go as, mm-hmm. as its own entity.
Right.
Because we saw, like, I remember when all I used for the internet was like to go on Battle.net and play StarCraft.
Right.
And now we can use the internet to replace taxis and get ride shares going. We can use the internet to replace hotels and like have people be able to share rooms like that. It's a, like, that was unbelievable 10 years ago.
Right.
And
to like seek knowledge that would otherwise only be across the world in like some obscure library under some obscure,
exactly,
like, person's.
And this is guidance. Something that's happened within the last lifetime.
Uh-huh.
And like imagining what can happen in multiple lifetimes, in multiple iterations. Like if a human is a different human in 10 years, and then what does that mean for the internet? You know,
right,
what I mean?
That's like, what I'm saying. It's like, it's totally like tangible. Like, I feel like it could happen.
It's just like, who knows? I do not discount that. Like,
right.
I believe that, like, if by any measure, you're probably underestimating like what can happen. Like,
oh,
just,
yeah,
just because like our human minds can only imagine things in a
so
steady
much.
Steady rate of increase rather than a logarithmic.
Right. Even the things that I've seen technology come out with in the past year, like, have completely just, like, mind-blown me. There was something I saw the other day that was, like, a tattoo, right? And tattoos, of course, that interest me. So this person's got this tattoo, and they take, like, a sound wave, tattoo it on the person's arm, and then there was an app on the person's phone that scanned the sound wave and played it.
Oh, man.
So it's, like, you could play back a vision that you have on your body, you know, like, can you imagine like the way that we're going to merge with the internet, you know, like it's going to be connected to us, like in our brain, you know, like all that shit's going to be accessible to us without a cellular device. Like that is like, this is going to be a thing of the past, you know, like a generation to however many generations later, people are like, you had to have an external device to like access this. It wasn't just in your collective consciousness already. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's like, I feel like that's the direction that we're going.
And people are already talking about that with, like, tape players and CDs, you know? It's just, like, it's very, very interesting.
Evolution is exponential.
Especially when you introduce something crazy as the internet.
Yeah, it is crazy.
How do you finish the prompt, after I die, I want?
Okay.
Wait, actually, no, yeah, all right, let's go for it. Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
Don't mean to throw your drive off, yeah.
No worries. All right, after I die, I want... I guess I just wanted to, like, put in a little comment here, too. There's, like, this saying that I know of. Let me see if I can recall it exactly. But I think it was, like, a man comes to Buddha and says, I want happiness. How can I obtain it? And I think Buddha was... I'm just saying because he said, I want happiness. And Buddha was like, well, take out I, because that's the ego. Take out want, because that's desire. And all you're left with is happiness. So I just think it's interesting to, like, you know... After I die, I want, you know, because those are the two parts of, like, the sentence that Buddha took out. So it's, like, interesting to, like, create an answer that's like not out of ego or desire, but using the terminology of ego and desire.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I guess, what do I want after I die? I would have to say, after I die, it will be my hope that our society will be able to heal itself and for people to be free, not only in a way that is like how they can function, but free in their spirits, their hearts, and in their minds to like truly know that like we can manifest anything and that this is our realm and that, you know, like everybody can be like a god of or goddess of like their own lives, you know, like we can all manifest like magical, incredible things. It's just a matter of like believing in oneself. There was a book that I read when I was younger. I used to do a lot of reading when I was younger, and like reading all these fantasy stories and like immersing myself into these like fairy tales of like other realities with dragons and dwarves and elves and like magic and all that stuff. And one of them was like this magic book that I read. I don't remember what it was called. It was a pretty obscure one. It was like not a series or anything, but it was like this girl in the library, I think, was like reading these books, and then she maybe met a character or something that like kind of came to life and was trying to like teach her about magic. And of course, you know, when you're learning about magic as a kid, they're always saying, well, magic only works if you believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the conundrum then is, of course, well, how can I believe in magic if I can't prove that it's real?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I feel like that is where I was at in that, you know, like that mind frame when I was younger. I was like, I can't believe in something all the way. If how can I really know? Because I wanted so badly to believe in magic. I just wanted to know that like things could be like more than what they are. You know, I couldn't possibly like accept that like this reality was like as mundane and like incapable of supporting that like potential, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So like I was seeking like this confirmation in like everything that I read, like whether or not I could really find magic. You know, like I remember when I lost teeth and I wanted, you know, like the fairy tooth, like the fairy godmother or whatever would come mm-hmm. take your tooth while you're sleeping and like leave you money or whatever. I remember writing a letter to her being like, fairy godmother, I would like Hermione's magic wand. More than anything in this world.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because I just wanted to know, like, is magic real? Is magic something that I can, you know, like, engage with? Is it something that is a part of this reality? Or do we just live in this, like, plain, blank, mundane, like, reality where everything is only as it seems? And I just, like, refused to, like, accept that, you know? And then my mom was teaching me, like, magic is real through, like, the spells that we would do during our Wicca practice. You know, I'd have my altar and, you know, like, I would see, like, how things would correlate, you know? I would have, like, these little confirmations of, like, we did this magical spell and, like, this magical thing happened because of it, you know? And I was like, well, maybe that's all that magic is. Maybe we're just limited to, like, this kind of, like, spellbound thing. And then, you know, like, later, having an understanding of energy, I was like, okay, well, if you can energetically shift things that are going on, then isn't that really magic? Isn't shifting your reality, shifting the energy that's happening, creating a new reality, creating things to appear, allowing magic to flow through you and create magical things in the realm that you're experiencing. So I guess after I die, it is my hope that when people are born and when they're growing up in their society, that they don't have to question that, that they don't have to ask themselves, is magic something only in my mind? Is like this belief limited? And am I limited? You know, like, I want people to be born knowing that anything is genuinely, truly possible and that you can manifest magic. You can create your reality. And I genuinely believe that humanity will come together in a unified consciousness and manifest magic together. That is my hope.
I love that. And I think that I can't imagine a better way to like a note to end this conversation on as well. And I am very thankful that we were playing phone tag. We were like tagging each other out a little bit, trying to get this to work out. And I'm so glad that it did, because this has been a really lovely conversation and like a very heady one as well. And I enjoyed it very, very thoroughly. And I want to give you the floor to in the last few minutes, last few moments, to speak directly to the audience, to people in the future that are listening to this through this little recording device, through the internet, wacky thing that it is.
Right.
And whether it is somebody who's struggling, somebody who knows you personally is like, hey, Alana's pretty cool. Or maybe it is like a future student of yours that is listening to this conversation and saying, what is 21-year-old Alana like? You know?
That's funny.
Or maybe a future version of yourself.
Right.
The floor is yours.
All right. Well, I guess first of all, I'd like to say thank you so much to you, Eugene, for inviting me to be able to have this experience with you. And me as Alana Karma to be super grateful to be here, to be able to like have this conversation and kind of like flow through it, you know, because I feel like we don't spend enough time in our culture just like thinking and contemplating and debating and, you know, like collaborating and creating ideas, you know, like back in ancient Greece and Rome, you know, there would be so many like discussions and debates and conversations just of like just to theorize about the world and create new ideas out of like what's going on. And you know, I think our culture definitely severely lacks that outlet, so I think it's really, really wonderful that you have this podcast and that you do these prompts, especially like on the surrounding this concept of death, you know, because our culture like has a severe disconnect with like what that means, and you know, people are more afraid of it than they are willing to like think about it. Mm-hmm. Even, you know. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'd like to thank everybody for taking the time to listen to this. And I hope that, you know, some of these concepts have, like, influenced you in a way that has opened you up or made you more receptive to, like, what the universe is capable of. You know, like, we live in an infinite reality with infinite galaxies, infinite universes, and, like, infinite energy to create. You know, source is nothing more than the capacity to create anything. And you are a part of source, which means that you are capable of creation, whether or not that is like a job that you want or a dream you want to follow or like something that you would like to manifest. It is all within your range of capacity. And blessings on your journey doing so.
Alana, thank you so much. This has been Alana Karma on Death.